may not understand this, but you really can change bits that we don't actually use in Linux, which is kind of cool. I mean, one of the things with Linux is that because it's so portable, you really can't use all the weird interfaces that each chip has. You've really got to stick to what's in Linux and then build your stuff on top of it. So we don't actually care about the hardware reference and change bits. We do that in software. So for us, no problem. For certain other on the low-level exercises, and it had been brought up. And so the machine was at a state where it was ready to run. So there are a lot of competing resources, obviously. There's one working machine. There's a lot of different groups out there, different other operating system groups as well, that had priority at the time. So we only had third shift time in Austin. So at 2 a.m., we finally got some time. A lot of the reason for that is that we'd already debugged all the problems on the machine with no memory. And so by that morning, we basically got a machine, got a prompt, and looked at each other and said, well, what the hell do we do with the machine? It's obvious. You're on a web server. So we chucked the web server on. Having this in-memory root file system was fantastic because you don't need any I.O. To bring these machines up. And more important, well, another issue, lately we get onto machines that we don't know. They may have a network, they may not, and we can easily test them just by being able to get it through the hardware debugger. That's the only point of contact we need for the machine. And see if I could analyze the panic, and they'd pick up their little hardware debugging tools and try and work out whether they could beat me to the punch. They did. Pretty depressing, really.
Was that because it was buggy hardware or buggy software?
It was a combination of both, but definitely the buggy hardware. There's a lot of complexity in there, and when you add that up, if we had a bug, there'd be me on the Linux side, there'd be a partition firmware guy, there'd be a hypervisor guy and a hardware guy, which makes life a bit difficult. So we basically cut out the middleman. We run without any firmware at all. All we need is the machine to be able to run instructions and for us to be able to DMA Linux in, and it takes over straight away. So the simplicity there was fantastic. At disk performance? Yeah, it was terrible. And we flipped that one bit, and bang, up we go by 50%. And we'd already diagnosed, fixed, and sent that fix upstream to the firmware guys before they'd even booted on the machine. And that was kind of key, and we've done that with a number of bugs. The other big thing we got out of it was that we got a lot of Linux to it. We hit bugs in SCSI layer locking. The other trick I used to do was try and bring online 500 disks all at once. So Linux would see nothing, and then it would see 500 disks. And the locking in the SCSI layer was not quite up to that level of that level of stress. So there were bugs there. And normally, in my job in the LTC, I wouldn't quite have access to machines of the caliber that we were getting here time and time again. And what we'd like to do is we always tracked mainline. I thought that was pretty important. It was actually quite good for us because we'd be able to track mainline and find any bugs that get introduced straight away. With this continual development, maybe 140%. So if your scheduler was stupid enough to start filling up threads, your basically performance is going to be pretty awful. And you see it in certain graphs that early on we had some Java workloads, and you watch them, and they're basically jagged edges on the way up because every now and then the machine would reschedule and then move things to be a better situation where you have a second. And what happened basically was the hardware guys showed me some traces, and they're like, what's this address and what the hell are you doing? Okay, it's a Linux bug.
And Tom?
Yeah?
You want to say something about how the cache is organized in Tower 5? Or is there multiple cache for that sort of thing?
In, what's that? This was the big machine that we had to do our Linux and Power 5 testing on. So it was 128 way, 128 gig of memory, that's not too bad. There were 640 PCI slots. It was pretty big. About 500 disks, 30 terabytes of storage. 360 gigabit networks. And it did have 400 we could to find the worst bugs we could and get them before customers would. As I was saying, yeah, our I.O. stress test, our aim was basically to push the machine as hard as it could. And what happened at about this time was that some executives were coming through and were like, oh, we got... it was a new territory. It was new territory for us. SMT was new. We hadn't done it before. And it was pretty obvious that if you get it wrong, terrible things happen. As I said, with our benchmarks, some of our benchmarks, I'll show you a JBB graph in a moment, but some of those early numbers just looked awful, and they were probably unpublishable because they varied by too much. So it's really important.
What's the cost of switching from SMT?
The cost. It's not free. We have a bit of a heuristic, which isn't fantastic at the moment. We get into the idle loop, and we decide we've been in the idle loop for a certain amount of time. We may as well turn that thread off. To turn it back on, it's actually got to go through a system reset. So there's a code path. It's not like instant. So we don't do it all the time. Once you get further on in boot, where you have, you know, all the threads ready to be used and that sort of thing. Another couple of reasons for having this ability is that we never boot a machine once. We boot it hundreds of times. If we have a difficult to find hardware bug, we're going around and around. We're setting chip in. You're guaranteed all your disks will be out of order. All your network cards will be out of order boot to boot. And it sounds like a bit of a worry, a bit of a pain, but things like UDEV and all that sort of thing make it easy. We had some other tools where we could basically work out where we were, and we had things on the disks and stuff like that to understand where the disks were. But that was an obvious problem with PCI Parallel Probe. Fire off a thread for every single host bridge. So there's 192 of these threads all going out there at once, trying to bring the machine up. So it made a big difference. I mean, it would have taken hours and hours to bring up otherwise. And it's kind of something that would be nice for us to start looking at, as Ben was saying, in the mainline kernel. Because a lot of machines out there have a lot of I.O. And even with a small amount of I.O., 4.8 seconds, it's pretty useful. I like to be able to compile my kernels pretty quick. I'm pretty impatient. So that was pretty cool. So we thought we just happened to have which we're going to call Kernbench Rate. And so the problem with Kernbench is it's mostly single threaded. You get to the end, you've got a link. You've got one CPU going. There's this entire machine doing nothing. So we decided, well, how many kernels could we compile per second? I think that's a better metric. So they're pretty decent machines, and they'll do for now. And the other thing to point out is that Linux works pretty well on them. What's that? Also, the incremental bring up, how we could actually adapt Linux so that we ran without memory locally, or it ran without interrupts. It ran polled mode network drivers. That was actually very useful too. And obviously, we found a bunch of bugs. We found bugs all throughout Linux doing this bring up. So there are actually advantages from our side as well. We're pretty impressed with it. Did we actually do that? Yeah. Because we're testing USB stuff, so we plugged in whatever we had USB. Milton has a whole bunch, an array of USB crap, so we plugged everything we could in.
What did you plug in the video card? X.
Well, that's a question that comes up a lot, funnily enough. We support most features. Was there any... What in particular were you?
Referencing.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah. Well, it's more a fact that it doesn't really fit in with the Linux model, and for us it's just easy to work with software reference and change bits than it is with hardware ones. Everything we've merged upstream. The important thing for us there was that it reduced our load, because as soon as you merge a fix upstream, you could forget about it. And that was actually quite good for us. We'd keep, as much as possible, we'd feed every fix in we could find. Well, so... next question. Man.
Did you get kind of a reaction from IBM people that you were too fast and loose? You weren't doing it the way it's always been done?
It's like a frog set room on steroids.
So what's the deal with Cell?
Talk to Paul McGinney. Paul McGinney, hey?
Nice.
Yeah, something different.
So the lawyers will not let you talk about funding later.
No, no. Area just to split the two probes up, so we do an initial probe and a second probe. But the rest is all the hot plug infrastructure is there, so that you fire off, you know, multi-threaded things, all probing adapters, and they're all just coming up through hot plug.
Well, the pizza hasn't arrived when I was there
about 2 minutes ago.
But it's something I think for those big machines we really need. It's just depressing.